Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to SightAndVisionRadio.com presents the Ecumenical Health Council Radio Show Monthly Report, a show about your health, all you want to know, all you need to know, and all you will know about healthy living, healthy lifestyle, and a spiritual lifestyle. And here to introduce our ministers of health is our own hoster with the mostest, Miss Renee.
Well, thank you, Reverend Radio Ray. Now, we haven't always heard the words food and justice paired together, but the eroding access to healthy food has commanded that the strategies of a campaign. And today, the Ecumenical Health Council, heard here every fourth Friday, has yielded the mic to one of their collaborators, Prince George's County Food Equity Council. And we want to welcome their executive director, Sydney Daigle. Hello, Sydney. Welcome.
Hi, Renee. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our delight. Reverend Ray, are you there to say hello?
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi, Reverend Ray.
Now, when we walk in a grocery store, we're inundated with aisles and aisles of choices. How can anyone in the U.S. be hungry?
That's a good question. So, hunger is complex. You know, it's a result of not having enough money sometimes in your weekly food budget to afford the foods that you want for yourself and your family. As we know, that can be caused by many different things. We at the Prince George's County Food Equity Council are a local food policy council. And one of the reasons I really enjoy the work that we do is because we often look at the root causes of problems like hunger and figure out how we can change the food system that causes things like hunger to exist in such a wealthy nation like the United States. Does that start to answer your question, Renee?
It is, but, you know, here again, because the issue is so complex, that's what I want to begin to introduce the idea. Now, I carefully chose the word choices, not food. In this country, we are experiencing negative health metrics of diabetes, obesity, and starting at younger ages. In your opinion, what are we doing wrong?
Right. I think a lot of the issues that we see in our country related to health and diet are really the results of these broken food system, because I think that the food system that we have has been broken for quite a long time. Maybe it was broken to begin with. But I think the problems that we see are because there's these structural gaps and disconnected decision-making that happens by our fire leadership, by our policymakers, within the different institutions that kind of influence what sort of choices we have in our day-to-day lives when it comes to food. And, of course, these breaks, if you will, in the food system really lead to inefficiencies, it leads to inequality, it leads to problems like hunger and obesity and diet-related disease. We kind of look at how we can bridge those gaps as a food policy council. So what we do is we bring together different representatives from across our food system And when I say food system, uh-huh. it's all of the different people and processes and places that your food goes through from the farm, you know, where it's grown, to ultimately your plate as a consumer. That's what I mean when I say food system. So it's a huge thing, right? But we bring together representatives from across the food system to kind of come together and say, how can we connect these gaps and how can we bridge these divides and improve our food system so that everyone in our communities has access to healthy, safe, affordable, sustainably produced, and culturally appropriate food in their neighborhood. And how can we make sure that there's justice and economic opportunity built into our food system for workers and for consumers? So that's what we do, and we do that through policy change. And that can address something like obesity. So maybe we're working to address obesity through getting more kids access to healthy school meals, mm-hmm. which is something that we've done in Prince George's County. Or perhaps mm-hmm. we're looking at farmers markets and making sure that families of all income levels can shop at a farmers market and ensuring that farmers markets in our county accept food stamps and SNAP and WIC and all the different federal food nutrition programs that we want to see being accepted everywhere. So that's some of the ways that we start to target some of these complex issues that we see come up because of our broken, if you will, if you'll allow me, food system.
We will. And what I was struck by when I was looking at the community health partnership when it was formed and when the food equity council was formed, that when you talk about having a real cross-section of people who are concerned with the food system, I was amazed that you've got people from the grocery stores. You have we expect a certain number of elected officials to be there. But you have advocacy groups. You've got government agencies. You've got urban farmers. You've got health care providers. You have, because it is such a complex issue, and that's what I was struck by, and I think you touched on that. And I really want I want to ask you more about the role that Prince George's County plays here in getting SNAP benefits, and for those who aren't familiar with that, Sydney can explain that, and the WIC vouchers, why that's important to be accepted at a farmer's market. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got that accepted in Prince George's County and what it means to the consumer?
Absolutely. So first off, I do want to circle back to your comment on the diversity of our membership, because really that our power as a food policy council is in our membership. And that's the reason that we're able to get the things done that we have so far in this county. And they really range from forest gardeners and urban farmers to grocery stores like Giant Food, to government agencies like the local Department of Social Services and the health department, to anti-hunger advocacy groups like Maryland Hunger Solutions, local food bank. And I could go on. Anyone who's interested in learning more can visit our website at www.pgcfbc.org to see our full list of members. But the way that we, you know, the way that we went about ensuring that farmers markets accepted SNAP or food stamps, and when I say SNAP, it is a federal food nutrition program that provides money on a monthly basis to families and individuals who qualify to help them supplement their monthly food budget. And that money in Maryland starts at as little as $16 a month. So it's, you know, for some people who are struggling with hunger, it's not always enough money, but it is a little bit extra to help people, you know, bridge the gap in their monthly grocery shopping and whatnot. So we feel like farmers markets are a really exciting opportunity for people to access fresh, healthy, locally grown foods in the communities where they live, work, and play. So we've looked at multiple ways that we can support farmers markets and we can support the people who shop at farmers markets. You know, we've supported farmers markets through decreasing the different permit fees that they pay and their vendors pay. and ensuring that they can operate into the evening hours so that folks who might not be able to go by on a Saturday morning because maybe their shift is on a Saturday morning where they work are able to visit the farmer's market on, let's say, a Thursday evening after they get off.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also ensured that people we've encouraged rather the county to incentivize SNAP acceptance, so that food stamp again acceptance at farmers markets through a program called the SNAP to Health program. So this SNAP to Health program was passed in 2014. I'm sorry, and it was mm-hmm. a program that provided $100,000 over 3 years to local farmers markets to get set up to accept SNAP and WIC and also incentivize folks to spend their benefits at farmers markets through marketing and other sort of incentive programs like double value coupon programs where your market doubles the value of your benefits when you shop there. Unfortunately, right after the program passed, it was defunded in response to the county's budget deficit. But since then, we've advocated every year for programs to be returned, program funding to be returned, and currently the program's been funded at up to $50,000. So we're very proud of that, and we're very proud to see more markets accepting SNAP every year.
Well, it's so good to hear that you didn't give up after it was defunded, that and finally some monies were added. But that is huge in somebody's budget to be able to spend X number of dollars and it be doubled because you're doing the right thing. What was the state of the county's health when the community health partnership was formed? And because of that kind of program and other programs, has there been any measurable improvement in Prince George's County?
Sure. So Prince George's County it does have high rates of food insecurity. You know, we have the highest rates of food insecurity for the D.C. metro region. So that is to say for Washington, D.C. and its immediate surrounding counties. Then there's also kind of high rates of diet-related chronic disease in the county. And so this was something that we were concerned about in the Port Town Community Health Partnership, which I'm sure you guys have heard about on this show many times before, but just to refresh everyone's memory, the Community Health Partnership is a collaboration of four towns in Prince George's County, Bladensburg, Colmar Manor, Cottage City, and Edmundston, who are located on the Anacostia River. They're port towns. And it's a collaboration between those municipalities, nonprofits, funders, and residents, you know, community stakeholders who came together to create healthier, more livable communities. And they were able to do a lot of things like put in, trails for folks to walk and run on. But they were sort of challenged when they got to the part of their mission that addressed healthier eating. And they weren't able to see the sort of changes they wanted in their community as far as increased access to healthier foods went. And then they looked at strategies and launched a food policy council, which is, of course, us, the Food Equity Council. So they were very concerned about this as well. I can't say since we started that we've seen measurable changes in health outcomes. That is always a long-term goal, and we do expect that will take a while to see changes and sort of decreases in the rates of diet-related chronic disease or food insecurity. However, we have seen some definite changes in access to healthy food. One example that I'm very excited about is Prince George's County Public Schools electing this federal provision called the Community Eligibility Provision. And basically what that does is in high schools with high poverty in the community, it allows every student in those schools to have universal free school lunch and free school breakfast. So every child in that school gets free school lunch and free school breakfast. That has impacted 9 schools in this county, and that's a result of our advocacy at the state level with some of our partners like Maryland Hunger Solutions to make sure that schools across Maryland could use this federal provision, and then our advocacy at the county level as well as other partners to encourage the school district to go ahead and participate. And the program, it affects over 4,000 students in this county. So those are students who before may not have been able to fill out the paperwork required or might not have participated in their free school lunch and breakfast program because of stigma. You know, unfortunately, that's mm-hmm. sometimes associated with those school meal programs. Now those kids are getting two solid meals every day when they're at school, and we are very excited about that program.
But is that the Hunger Free Schools program, or is that something
it
different?
It sure is. Thank you, Renee. It is the Hunger Free Schools Act of 2015, and that is actually up for renewal this year. So we have advocated with our partners for that to be renewed in Annapolis, and I sure hope that anyone who's listening who's a Maryland resident will call their state delegate or senator and let them know that this is a very important program to renew.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you said that because one of the things we strongly encourage our listeners to do is to become active. And Reverend Ray calls for each community to do something in their own community around that issue. So we're going to take a break, but when I come back, I want you to define a term that you've used, because sometimes we can devolve into agency speak, and I want you to define food insecurity for our listeners. And then I also want to talk about, if people are listening, what they can do in their own community. So we'll take a break here, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to blogtalkradio.com/marketingpulpit, and you're listening to the Ecumenical Health Council radio show monthly report. And our ministers of health is Reverend Willie W. Duvall, and we call him Commissioner Coach Ray Smith. And we have a special guest today. We're also being brought to you by sightandvisionradio.com. And you can visit sightandvisionradio.com. And you will also hear all the past shows of the Ecumenical Health Council. And it's a hyperlink that you can go to their website and get the information. And they're heard here every Friday on the fourth Friday of the month. Tune in at 3 o'clock. Again, you're listening to blogtalkradio.com. /marketing pulpit. And now back to our special ghost guest with our host with the most is Miss Renee.
Well, thank you again, Reverend Radio Ray. We are listening to the mic being turned over today to the Prince George's Food Equity Council, and we have the privilege of having their executive director, Sydney Daigle, behind the mic today. Sydney, one of the words that you use or term you use was food insecurity. And that is that's a 50-cent word that I want you to break down for our listeners. What is food insecurity?
Absolutely. And I do apologize for my jargon. I always ask our members at the Food Equity Council to call everyone out whenever they use jargon. So let's go ahead and break it down. So food insecurity is defined by the United States Department of Agriculture as a household or individual that does not have enough nutritionally adequate food, so food that meets all of their nutritional needs to be active and healthy, or it's not safe food, or they're not able to acquire the food that they need in a way that they find satisfactory. So that's kind of complicated, but I'm going to give you a few examples of what that might look like. So a person who is food insecure might be getting maybe enough food on a weekly basis, but they may have to be borrowing food from family members, or perhaps they're having to go to a food distribution that the local food bank does. and they're not able to get the food from the grocery store, you know, on a regular basis like some of us are. Or perhaps they have, you know, SNAP benefits and they're able to get enough food for the first half of the month, but then their food stamp or SNAP benefits run out and the second half of the month is a very hard time for them and their family. So in Prince George's County, as I mentioned, we have the highest rate in the D.C. Metro region of food insecurity, and about 15% of our residents in the county are classified as food insecure.
Now, I think it's an important, I think the food insecurity is a catch-all and it's a wonderful, but again, for people who might be new to that concept, that's what it means, and you've broken it down very well. I recently met a gentleman from Key Largo who runs a food shelter, and I said, Key Largo? I thought that was one of the richest places in the country. What are you doing with a food pantry? And he said, there are two kinds of people that live on Key Largo, people who are very wealthy and the people who work for them, whether they are providing domestic services or yard cleaning or pool maintenance. Those are the people that the food pantry is for. And it shocked me. I guess it just is a reminder. Food insecurity can happen in any community, and food security, and there is no community that is immune from people who need additional food. So it was a lesson, and it just sort of left my mouth agape. One of the things, Sydney, is that if the name of your organization is the Food Equity Council, and equity implies fair and impartial. What does fair and impartial mean in the scope of your work?
Sure. So, and whenever we say food equity, we actually have a definition in mind. So we say that food equity means that everyone is able to find healthy, affordable, sustainable, culturally appropriate and safe food in their neighborhood. And it also means that there's justice and economic opportunity built into the food system, as I mentioned earlier, for our workers and also for our consumers. And when we say food equity, we really want everyone to have the opportunity to find the foods that they need to live their healthiest life in their neighborhoods. And we also want to make sure that the food system is one that promotes it's first sound economic development. It promotes public health, mm-hmm. and it ensures environmental sustainability so that no community is really suffering the brunt of the food system. And we certainly see that our current food system disadvantages some communities, particularly communities of color. And so we really focus on having this equity lens in our policy work to make sure that the solutions we're kind of supporting and advancing really address the needs of those residents in our county that are most negatively impacted by our current food system.
Well, you know, I shop in the grocery store like everybody else, and I try to stick to the perimeters. That's what we're taught. That's where all the healthy food is, the dairy, the eggs, the fresh fruit and vegetables. Of course, they get you with all the aisles because you almost have to go through the aisles to get to the healthy ones. But I'm always appalled when I get to the fruit and the I'm adding my budget up as I go, and I'm going, oh, I'm doing pretty well. And then I get to the fruits and vegetables. I get even to the frozen fruits and vegetables. I get to the meats. And, well, the meats you expect to be, the protein you expect to be a little expensive. But we don't eat meat in our houses. So even when we get to the fruits and vegetables, I'm appalled at what I can get for the same number of dollars if I were to go down one of the inner aisles. And it's just really disconcerting. It's very disconcerting. Now, one of the things you say is you call for cultivating justice and economic opportunity from the farm to the fork. Unpack that for us.
Yes.
What does it mean, economic justice from the farm to the fork? Are we paying a fair rate? We understand that, you know, the United States ostensibly has the cheapest food in the world, but is there a lack of equity there, a lack of parity for the farmer and getting it to our table?
Right. Yes. And unfortunately, there is, and it's really a hard thing to come to terms with, because we have this system that a lot of people cannot afford, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables in, because they are, as you said, they're much more expensive than very highly processed, maybe calorie dense but nutrient light foods that you find in those middle aisles. But at the same time, we see many farmers and who are not making enough money to stay on their farms. And we see, unfortunately, also some labor issues, workers' rights issues, where farm workers are not paid a living wage. We also see this in restaurants, where folks who work in restaurants are sometimes, or often, rather, not paid a living wage. And folks who work kind of service jobs, you know, your hostesses and your servers, are not seeing the same minimum wage that the rest of us are guaranteed. So we absolutely have issues with people who work in our food system and making sure that they're able to support themselves and purchase the same healthy food that they're providing us with. So some of the things that we have not worked. Yeah, so one of the things that we are making a point to do this year and future years is partner with organizations that are focused on workers' rights and ensuring that, you know, people who work in restaurants and on farms have the wages that they need to be healthy and to do well. We're going to work with them to learn more about what we can do as a local food policy council, because these are issues that we are challenged in unpacking as well, because they are very complex and they're often determined state level and the federal level, but that does not mean that we should not try to engage on them. On the local level, we have been working on ensuring farmers can stay on their farm when they want to and be successful. So we're looking at different things like land use policies, figuring out kind of what goes where on the land of the county. We have started an urban agriculture tax credit. So folks who are doing urban farming or growing food in a sort of suburban area of the county are able to get a little bit of help with their taxes and as kind of an incentive to continue growing and selling locally produced food. And we're even exploring things like a farmer incubator to try to figure out how we can provide space on county-owned land for new and beginning farmers to try their hand at farming for a market. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as you pointed out, it's a very complex and very layered response to hunger. My final word, so that Reverend Ray can jump in with his question, we're talking about accessibility, availability, and affordability. If you remember those three things, we can wrap up here that Sydney has reminded us how complex this issue really is. Reverend Ray, I didn't leave you much time. I apologize. I know you don't go down the middle aisles at all, but why don't you ask Sydney her question and then let her tell people how to get in touch with the council.
All righty. Welcome to Sydney. One of your first, and not only being a guest on our show, welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a couple of emails here, and one of the emails is from someone, listener in Prince George County, is that why is Prince George County considered a desert, a food desert, and how did that come to be?
Interesting question. So the food, we don't actually like to use the term food desert too much because, you know, it implies that there aren't food options in a community, which there are. It's just not always the food options that residents want, or maybe it's not the quality that they want. There is a great report that your listener can read called Healthy Food for All Prince Georgians that the Planning Department released that breaks down where supermarkets are in Prince George's County and where we need more. So that would be my recommendation for your listener, and they can find that on the county's website. And again, the report's titled Healthy Food for All Prince Georgians.
Well, we are up against the clock. Thank you very much, and we look to have you back on again because, boy, you're so full of information that the public needs to know, and we need to educate. the people. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us.
And I'd love to tell your listeners where they can find out more about us. We're actually
getting
new members right now. I encourage them all to go to www.tcpublicity.org.
All righty. All right, we'll get that. Thank you. Thank you. You're listening
to
this is the Freedom Talk Radio Show.
Coach?
Hey. Hi, Renee.
Sorry. I didn't see you until I came back to close out. Okay.
That's
I'm going to end the
episode.
We'll call you offline. Okay.
Okay. Hi, Sydney.
All right.
Great job.
Hi. Thanks, y'all.
Great
job. Thank you.
God bless you all. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.